Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 46. And happy Thanksgiving to all our listeners. I hope you had a great day Thursday. The Steelers got what they wanted. They went to Indianapolis and they got a 28-7 win over the Colts. Dave, a little bit similar to the game against the Browns. Maybe not a lot of style points. Did the Steelers get an impressive win last night, or did they get a little bit lucky?
Well, I think, you know, I thought about this after quickly rewatching the game and then, of course, doing all the side work that, you know, has to be done right after the game and writing and whatnot. I think you have to look at the end result here and really the end result from the last two games. You go into every game, David, wanting to get a win, regardless of who your opponent is. That's the goal. The Steelers achieved both those things, and if you're looking as an outsider and you just got in from out of the country, had no internet access, and you looked at the results of the last two games, and you see the Steelers won 24-9. And won 28-7, you're happy, and I think that's what you have to be, even if you saw the game right now at this point. You know, coming off of a 4-game losing streak, the Steelers have won 2 games by the amounts on the scoreboard that you would expect them to have won, and
or certainly more according to Vegas. I mean, you know, they. The scores are, you know, kind of blowouts, basically.
Right. I mean, any time that you keep a team under 10 points in the National Football League with the way the rules are slanted to the offense, yada, yada, I think that's the best way to look at what's happened over the course of the last 2 weeks.
Okay, let me ask you this. I thought at the end of the day, 24-9 was a fair reflection of how the game actually went, even though people point to the fact that it was a one-score game late and they got the defensive touchdown, and that's what made it 24-9. I do not think 28-7 is a fair reflection of how this game went. Now, when it was 21-7, I really thought we might see another 51-14 type of game, and the Steelers might blow the Colts out. And I don't want to take anything away from the Steelers' defense and the stands they made inside the 5-yard line 2 times that were obviously the difference makers in the game. But for a little luck, the Colts are right in that game. They had, you know, T.Y. Hilton drops what I think would have been a 65-yard touchdown pass, a ball in his hands. Moncrief drops one down deep on the sideline. Who knows how that drive turns out if he catches that ball. I think the Steelers did a lot of good things. I think, you know, had the score been different, maybe they would have played a little bit of a different game offensively. But I have to tell you, Dave, lots of props to Scott Tolzien. He fell apart in the last 7 or 8 minutes, but I thought that guy played great. His receivers didn't help him, man. Dorsett's got to catch that ball in the end zone. You put up a great still of that with Timmons on him where it looks like maybe Timmons makes a play, but really Dorsett's got to catch that. So in this one, like I say, I'm not taking things away from the Steelers, but if I'm the Colts, I'm kind of kicking myself about this game because it could have been a lot different than what the final score made it out to be.
Yeah, you're right, and I gave that some thought too. If this was Colts Depot and the Horseshoe Podcast,
yeah, killing ourselves.
We are bemoaning several drops in this game, and. Yeah, I mean, and blown red zone chances, that's what we're talking about. You know, I keep going back to things I've said in the past about, boy, you can go back and circle five or six plays probably in every game to be in the difference in the game. And unfortunately for the Colts, they weren't able to circle about five of those plays. And, you know, just several of them down in the red zone. You know, when that play to Dorsett was initially made, I thought Timmons was closer to it than he was. I thought he made a better play on it than what he did. Of course, you know, I'm trying to tweet and I'm looking and you know, kind of a bang bang play there. But you know, when you go back through and roll that back in, that's why I posted the steal that I did. Is Timmons wasn't as close as I thought. And boy, that ball is right there in Dorsett's hands. He's got to make that. And the one by Hilton, that was, whether or not that's a touchdown or not, you know, that's a huge chunk play.
Well, the reason I think it's a touchdown is the two guys coming were Timmons and Mitchell, and Mitchell had to come from forever, and Timmons was never catching him. So, you know, no guarantees. Maybe he gets called out like an Andre Johnson call, but yeah, that's pretty much felt like he's gone.
Now, we can sit here, and we're going to, I'm sure, kind of go through and nitpick this, you know, quite a bit. And, you know, but because that's what we do. But, you know, you have to tip your cap to the way the defense played in the red zone. This is a defense that came into this game the number one red zone defense in the league, right? You know? And, you know, they, regardless of how it happened, they made the stands and they kept them out of the end zone. You know, Mike Mitchell made some nice plays, two to three, I think, in the end zone that were close to the end zone that were key. I think Sean Davis also made a nice crunching hit on one of those escapes by Tolzien. They obviously stuffed the run very, very well, not only, you know, any portion of the field overall, but in the red zone in particular. And, okay, you got a little bit luck on a drop by Dorsett on one of those. Those things happen. The other team is paid to make plays as well, and they didn't do that in this game. So 28-7. It did feel, and I posted this, I think, after the game or late in the game, you know, when it was 28-7, it felt more like 28-27. But they got the win. They got a big win. And as you mentioned, anytime you cover large spreads in the NFL back-to-back weeks, that's quite impressive.
Yeah, okay, so a couple things. One is, let's get into the injury report, and then I got a bunch of things I want to get into, as I'm sure you do as well. First of all, the Steelers again came, it sounds like they came out relatively healthy. Okay, it's, you know, all relative on this type of stuff. For the inactives, the inactive list was almost exactly what we all expected, almost the same as last week, except Daryl Richardson was down and Jordan Dangerfield was up, and Dangerfield played special teams in this game, so he was an active participant, not just a guy who dressed on the sidelines. The injuries were really, Ramon Foster goes with an ankle, and I didn't see this. I'm assuming it's not a big deal, but I didn't see any notion of this. So, did you get any sense of it during the game?
No, I did not, but he only missed, you know, how many snaps here? And like I said, I've gone through it just once quickly. Foster only missed five snaps in the game. So, you know, that'll give me kind of an approximate timeline maybe to go back through and kind of look for when that injury may or may not have happened. Might have to wait for the all 22.
And those five snaps might have been with Landry Jones in there. That's, I'm assuming that's about how many he took. So it might have just appeared that he was getting a rest. So we'll check on that. Javon Hargrave, a hand injury. Again, no idea the extent of that. You would think that's not a season-ending injury, but you know, if he busted a bone in his hand, he could miss a game or two. That would obviously be a much bigger loss now with Cam Hayward out. But again, no idea, idle speculation. And then Mike Mitchell with the stinger, we have to assume that's not a big deal. He came back in and played. You know, I'm with you, Dave. I think Mike Mitchell played a very good game, and I know Mike Mitchell is a lightning rod for Steeler fans, as is any player who does some what some fans perceive as dumb things in terms of the emotional stuff on the field. And I think that's part of the reason Mitchell is perceived that way. But had one of his better games and obviously got his first pick of the season. So the injury report, not all bad. Hey, Steeler fans, let me tell you, the mortgage process sometimes can be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through this sometimes daunting process to help you score the home of your dreams. Even in Buffalo. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxane, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399. Illinois residential mortgage licensee, equal housing lender.
You know, going back to Mitchell, David, yeah, yes, he's missed some tackles this year. I mean, everybody's going to remember what happened more than anything in that game against the Ravens when, you know, a stiffed arm or missing the tackle on Mike Wallace and with the stiff arm, and then of course on the play to Steve Smith on the big 30-something yard gainer that he had. Is it the fact that Mike Mitchell does kind of flex and?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Okay, so that's what you think. He doesn't statistically light it up enough to do that. Is that what fans have an issue with when it comes to Mike Mitchell?
Well, I think he can give up two bad plays and then he'll make a play and do that. And so fans are like, you know, if you're not playing a perfect game, don't be doing that. And also, I think it's a, you know, what's the score of the game? It's all kind of the scenario that you're doing it. I think they're used to guys back there like Troy and, you know, Ryan Clark. Whatever you think of Ryan Clark, he might have run his mouth a lot in the locker room, but he wasn't a guy doing it on the field. And I just think in general, whether it's the get off my lawn type of attitude of older Steeler fans like us, just in general, fans don't love that. And, you know, we can get – that's the perfect time to touch on what happened with AB. And I have to tell you, that was my perception is Steeler fans are just absolutely fed up with it. And then the flip side of it is, as I wrote, when he made, the second touchdown catch and then he makes the third touchdown catch. That's why you put up with all the BS, the diva-ness, the dancing, the penalties. That's why you put up with all of it. Because that's Antonio Brown, that's what you get. And at the end of the day, it's a small price to pay. But having said that, Dave, and you know, we might as well touch on this right here. I mean, it's almost like he's giving a full double bird to his teammates, his coaching staff, the fans, and the league when he does this stuff. Because those two guys absolutely 100% have to know that a choreographed dance, which that's clearly what that was. Don't tell me they all of a sudden, they happen to find themselves together in the end zone and knew how to do a 17-second, you know, shuffle hand slap that they'd never done together before. So they got a flag, and it was the right call. And I know exactly why people throw up their arms, because I just look at it and throw up my arms too. And it certainly – it's easy to argue that it absolutely contributed to the Colts' only touchdown.
Yes, yes, yes. You're right. Do I like it? No. Do I understand why the penalty was called? Yes. Did it indeed result it obviously helped the Colts out field position wise on their next drive and they obviously capitalized on it. So yes, you could say it definitely led to, you know, points. I mean, anytime you allow the opposition to start it, where do they start? Something like the 47, the Colts on that next drive.
I on the Steelers side of the field, I'm not sure. I think it was a 42-yard return by Todman, so he caught it around the 10. So that sounds about right.
Right, and then then the defense gave up. I'm trying to remember the sequence of plays there. I know Gore ran on first down.
It was the fake punt.
Oh, right. That's the fake punt series. Sure. All you can do is just try to talk to these guys, you know.
I mean, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to do any kind of psychological analysis of Antonio Brown. Virtually impossible. Do you think he's
trying to test the league or what?
Do you think he's just so dumb he doesn't know, or do you think he knows and he doesn't care, or do you think it's something else?
I think they just all get caught up in that thing, you know.
You know, and then if they throw a flag, it's like, why throw a flag? We're just having fun.
Yeah.
Look, nobody's arguing the rule's not stupid, but it's like the marijuana rule, okay? And Carlos Williams, which we'll get into. We know the rules are what the rules are. So if you willfully violate the rules, you're going to pay the price. I mean, it's just like the speed limit. Nobody, you know, maybe you don't like a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, but you know if you drive 90, you're going to pay the price for it. Well, these guys, I mean, Antonio Brown knows the rules. It's not really an argument about the rules. The rules aren't going to change this week if he scores a touchdown against the Giants and so that he's going to be okay. I mean, if the CBA changes and they change the rules, fine. But it is – the rules are what they are. So the defense of Antonio Brown is now out the window. I mean, I think we all probably overreacted initially, and then we all kind of let it go when he jumps on the goalpost when they're beating the Colts 100-6 or when they're beating the Skins, you know, 100-6. But when it's 14-0 and then they come back and score a touchdown, I think, you know, people are tired of defending Antonio Brown.
Well, you know, you got the diva attitude and all like that on top of it, and you know that's part of you know kind of what makes him who he is now, I guess, at this point. I hate so much about talking about things that don't involve throwing the football or running the football.
Well, let's move on. Yeah, we can move on. I mean, we've covered it, but
I get where you're coming from, and was I disappointed at the time? Yes, but that's way down my list.
If they had lost the game 24-21. It would be a huge deal.
Right. I guess I get less. I mean, like Clark Major, I get caught up a little less than that than maybe you do when it comes to this topic here.
Yeah, I don't care about the AB stuff, and we didn't really bring it up. I mean, generally, I kind of got past it, but I mean, I think the reaction on Twitter yesterday was I don't think it was over the top. I just think people have finally had enough. Was more kind of the reaction, not like this is anything new, or not like we haven't discussed the topic. It's just, I mean, to me, it's just more kind of what you're doing to your coach and your teammates. I mean, you know, silly stuff. Okay, let me ask you this. I tweeted this, and I thought it was so smart, and then you know it went away for two quarters. The offense that we saw in the first three drives was the offense that we've been talking about since August, and it is exactly what you were looking for. You had the offensive line opening up big holes for Le'Veon Bell, and Le'Veon Bell running the ball well and being involved in the passing game. You had Antonio Brown with two touchdowns and Le'Veon Bell a touchdown. You had Antonio Brown with two touchdown catches, one of them of the super spectacular variety. You had Ladarius Green and Eli Rogers contributing with big plays, and you had Ben Roethlisberger absolutely throwing dimes, making great throws. It was nirvana for the Steelers offense. I mean, it was exactly the 30 point. You know, you put up 21 points in three drives. You're on pace for 60, and I just couldn't really for offensively. Those first three drives were draw it up, Todd Haley. You know, have it go out and execute it perfectly. That's about as good as it gets.
I would agree, except for where's that deep vertical threat down the sideline still. You know, that's the thing that I think is preventing this offense from scoring 35 to 40 points a game is having that guy. Now here's the thing, and I'm going to kind of wrap this into Sammy Coates and all. Sammy ended up playing what 10 snaps in this game against the Colts. Good to see him back on the field again. Did Ben underthrow him on the two deep balls?
On the left sideline, he definitely underthrew.
And technically, you could say that he did on both of them.
Well, Remind me of the other one. The other one down
the right side was the one that Sammy kind of had to hold up on a little bit. The Butler, I think, was in coverage on that other side, kind of step for step. It looks like Butler dives and misses it, and it actually looks like it may have went through Sammy's hands, kind of lowered to the ground there. But
when was that play?
That was third quarter, I believe, David, because I think, let's see, I'll let you know here in just a minute. The first deep pass down.
That Patrick Robinson almost intercepted.
Right. That was, wasn't that down the deep left-hand side?
Yeah, that was down the left
side.
Boy,
the play-by-play has that deep right.
Yeah, because that was, that was right after he went deep right, right? I mean, he came right back and went deep again.
Right, right. The second one happened with 10:04 left in the third quarter, and this one was down the deep right side. And this was the one with Darius Butler in coverage.
So I was in studio at that point. I don't have, when I go in studio, I don't have DVR, so I just don't have a full recollection of that play.
I'm not absolving Roethlisberger here because he could have probably put those balls out a little further here. My only kind of qualm with both of these passes was the fact that Sammy, I think, needs to do a better job of working harder.
Fighting for the ball
instead of letting it try to, hoping it makes its way through the defender instead of maybe slowing up and trying to go up and high point the ball. But that's never been.
I think that's fair.
Never really, though, if you go back to Auburn, that's never been really who he is, though, right? He's always been the guy that flies past you and catches the 33-yard touchdown on the run in stride.
It's also the hardest ball to fight for when you're running a full sprint to kind of come back and go up for a ball. That's if you're running a crossing pattern or something like that where you can attack the ball at a different angle, that's a little easier to do. I mean, you can make a little bit the same argument for the pass that was almost picked off in the back of the end zone with AB, where he's just got his hands out there in a basket trying to catch it, and the safety almost comes over and makes the play in front of him. Now, AB did tangle him up a little bit. And AB, later in the game, I think, made a great play when he got called for pass interference, because that was a ball that absolutely could have been picked off by Vonta Davis. I mean, it was after the back shoulder touchdown, and so Ben goes back shoulder again, and Vonta Davis played it as well as you can play it. And I give AB big props there, because the Steelers ended up scoring on that drive. They converted the first pass to Ladarius Green, and, even though he took the penalty, you want to talk about good penalties. That was a good penalty in my mind.
I would be interested to be a fly on the wall in the wide receiver room with Richard Mann to see what Richard Mann is telling a guy like Coates on these two deep balls. And if you think about it, not that you're going to get an answer from Mike Tomlin on Tuesday on it. I kind of backdoor him with the balls were underthrown, yada yada, but the Sammy knew need to do a better job of trying to fight for how to work. You know what I'm getting at. Trying to word those. I'm not gonna crucify Coates here, because as I said, both those balls, if Ben maybe puts those out there another 2 or 3 yards, maybe we're sitting here talking about Sammy Coates is back on track with two deep ball touchdowns. Who knows? But
okay. So let me give you an amazing stat here on Sammy Coates.
Yeah.
Since the Jets game, 13, I think. Since the Jets game, he has been targeted 13 times by Ben.
Okay.
And he has zero catches.
Right.
He has one catch, and he got Landry Jones. He got a 4-yard catch against New England with Landry Jones at quarterback. But he's been targeted 13 times by Ben since the Jets game, with no catches.
Yeah, you are correct, sir. As Johnny, as Ed McMahon used to say, I wonder how many people are old enough to remember that. By the way, did you know Florence Henderson died? Wow.
I did see that during the post game.
But back to Coates. Man, they got to get this guy going, David. They just absolutely got to get this guy going. And Todd Haley talked. Did you hear what Todd Haley had to say earlier in the week about Coates and the confidence and how really, mentally and physically, Haley kind of insinuated that he's fine, that, you know, they got to get his confidence back and you know, catching the football, and in so many words, he's just got to learn to fight through it and catch these 50-mile-per-hour balls and this, that, and the other. You want to get a guy back confidence going again, why not give him just utterly crazy easy throws like they used to do with Mike Wallace a few years ago, when Mike, because remember when Mike Wallace wasn't involved early in games, it seemed like he just he was in the showers mentally at that point. Start off a game and throw a screen out to Sammy over to the side or something like that, kind of getting mentally involved that way. And now look, I'm not going to pretend like I know the shape of, you know, what his fingers are like. They probably hurt like hell, but the fact that he's out there playing as many special team snaps that he's playing, and hey, he caught a kickoff as well. I think the biggest thing that upset me about all three of those targets Thursday night, David, was the fact that I can't wait to see this one on all 22. Was that kind of that outbreaking route on the third and long near the chain?
Third and 12. I think it was three takes. I don't think it was a great throw by Ben, but you never know if he didn't. You know, he was late out of his break because he did throw it to the marker. And having said that, he still could have caught it. Not an easy catch.
If you look at that, and I froze it right at the moment going back through last night when that pass was his direction. Yes, it was wide. Yes, he had to dive for it, but it hit him right up in the forearms. I mean,
you're right. He dove past the ball. It was like he made, you know, he put his arms out flat and went right over his forearms. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, and actually, you could hear that thud, you know, in the audio, and I'm assuming that thud was that ball clanking off of his forearms. But if you steal that thing right when the ball's there, and that's why I said I look forward to seeing this play probably of all three of them more than anything, because I want to see how indeed did he come out of his break, and did Roethlisberger put the ball where he expected Sammy to be. You know, it's easy to say, well, that's a wide throw by Roethlisberger, but was it? You know, we don't know. Ben looks like he's a little upset, you know, like he's definitely losing confidence in Sammy right now. And Lord knows when they're going to get DHB back. Not that it's a huge, big deal, other than the fact that, you know, probably DHB's 50-50 on something, even when you know, he blows by a guy. But, man, can you imagine now they got Ladarius Green sort of on track here? They got Le'Veon Bell doing Le'Veon Bell things. They got Antonio Brown doing Antonio Brown things. Eli Rogers, boy, what a great route that was by Eli Rogers on that long catch that he had. It was a good get off, gets inside position there, and was really college open, as we like to joke all the time on that long one he had. But when you look at those three wide receivers not named Antonio Brown, you know, they need to start getting a little bit more production from those guys, because Rodgers, Kobe Hamilton, and Sammy Coates were targeted six times in this game, had three total receptions for 41 yards, and 30 of those yards came on that one Rodgers catch that I just described. So if they can start getting a threat, you know, deep down the sidelines, it's probably going to open up things even more. You know, making one or two of those catches will probably do wonders for opening up the field a little bit more.
No doubt about it. I mean, and look, we saw it early in the season, so we'll see kind of where this goes. You know, they should target Eli Rogers even more. The two passes, you know, he catches the 30-yarder, he blows by that guy. I've been banging this drum since St. Vincent, so everybody knows what I think about it. It's there. It's impossible to guard if he's got kind of an option route off of that. And you know, it was an easy throw for Ben. He's got two steps on him, and it's a huge play, 30-yard gain. And then they ran a 6-yard out with him, which, by the way, you can run that play until you can't run that play. I mean, if you have a decent quarterback who can make an out throw, and, you know, I keep going back to the San Diego game years ago now, where Phillip Rivers just did it in front of Steelers DBs all day long. I mean, you can just throw that 6-yard out whenever you want, and they did it. And those are the play calls. I just wish the Steelers would do more of that. But, yeah, he's a part of it. So let's get into two things, Dave. One is let's go kind of back to this coach thing. And where did the Steelers stall? Well, you know, we talk about how they like to take shots deep on, you know, third and fourth and short, you know, really third and shorts. When they get single, you know, they get the coverages they want on the outside. They get man coverage, and they're going to go after it. Well, you know, this is one of the things there where that offense bogged down is – the third and two, they went deep to Sammy Coates. They didn't convert, and then they end up punting, and then, you know, things get off the rails a little bit. And that's, you know, we talk about it, and I tell people don't get frustrated when that happens because they've converted it so many times for touchdowns. Well, what's happened over the last 6 weeks is they haven't converted any of those for touchdowns. So, you know, you wonder if that should be less of a staple of the playbook. So that's point one. Just your thoughts on that.
Well, a lot of people were upset on that third and two that was incomplete to Coates down the right side. But
so yeah, that was the one, right? Yeah, that was the right side one.
But
right.
But Roethlisberger saw he had one on one on the outside. They were coming up to, you know, to try to protect against the run. That's what Ben does. Ben sees that, and that's when Ben likes to kind of try to put the knife in the back. You know, at that point. So, I mean, it's just one of those things. After the fact, and that ball falls incomplete, you say, "Damn, why didn't they just run it?" I mean,
the question is because they're not completing any of these deep balls anymore. Should they wait until they, you know, should they dial that back? I mean, I was all for it, and I'm still willing to defend it to a certain degree. Just my concern is they haven't shown an ability to do that anymore. The only guy who's catching a pass, you know, down the field is AB, and they're not going to really run that play with him. If you get it with AB, fine. Nobody's going to give that to you anymore, I don't think. But, you know, because Coach can't catch a pass these days, I'm not sure I want to be running that play with him.
Well, you're up 21-7.
Yeah, you're right. That can be the dagger. All right, so let me ask you the other question. We finally saw it with Ladarius Green, and this is what we've been looking for. And I have to say, on both of these throws, tons of credit to Ben Roethlisberger because he made great throws. The first one, a third and 12. Remember that. So this is now the sequence of plays where Antonio Brown has gotten the pass interference call, and it ends with Antonio Brown catching his second touchdown pass, getting both feet down, which was unbelievable. But a great throw by Ben off his back foot, reading the blitz, and just throwing it high and laying it out there. And it's not the easiest catch in the world over your shoulder by Green, but I thought he looked really good on that. And on the second one as well, excuse me. Yep. Great play design getting Sammy Coates to clear it out. And Ben, again, showing great touch over the linebacker.
Yeah, both times Green ran away from players that he needs to run away from. One of them was Eric Walden. How many times do you see Eric Walden have to go downfield with a player, you know, 20 something yards like that? I mean, he's normally the guy getting after the quarterback, you know. So that is a guy that Green should run away from, and he did. The ball was in the air before I think Green even turned around, so he had to find it and you know, catch it over his shoulder there. On the other one, on the other side, in both of these, if memory serves me, Green started off attached to the line of scrimmage. On the second one, DeQuell Jackson was the one that had to run with him. And
who was the first one was number 52. I was thinking that was Jackson. Who was 52?
The second one was Jackson, because that was on the right side. The first one was Eric Walden.
Is he 52?
That's 90 something.
Who was the first one was thrown over number 52, and I'm just trying to remember who that was. I was trying to remember in the post game. I don't have my cold.
Well, I went back and looked at the games. 93 was the one he beat the first time, and that was Walden, David.
All right, maybe I'll go look at it again.
And then the second one happened was 52. I believe that he ran away. Maybe I need to put my glasses on. I don't know, but I could have sworn that was 93 and Eric Walden.
Okay, well, so you know, we see that. And you know, I've been banging this drum probably pretty hard as well, that this guy's going to be a big part of the offense. And the ridiculousness at the beginning of the season by some of the beat writers that this could turn out to be the worst Steeler signing ever. And before the guy had even, you know, practiced a practice yet. Come on, it's just nonsense stuff when you sign a guy to a four-year deal. I'm not telling you Ladarius Green's going into the Hall of Fame. But the key here is you've got five games left in the season, and now Ladarius Green is contributing. And we saw a little bit from Bud Dupree. And that's the key. You get now, you got a long week. You get everybody. And Ladarius Green got a little dinged up in his last game. So he's, you know, he gets a little time to get healthy again. He can become a bigger and bigger part of the offense. Now he and Ben have developed a little rapport on two similar types of plays. Same with Dupree. Now he's in there getting some snaps. What you want is you want them, when you get to these last three games in the division, you want those guys to be full up to full speed, and that's it. So, yeah, maybe Green didn't do what you wanted, you know, what everybody wanted against Dallas or against Cleveland, but now you saw something, and now you've got five more weeks to get him ready, you know, so that he's a big contributor in the playoffs. And it's just, you know, everybody has to be, I got to imagine if you watched that game, you had to be somewhat impressed with what you saw from Bud Dupree, just in terms of how fast he looked and physical he looked. Did he make it, you know, many splash plays? No, not really. But he was a guy there, and you can see he is going to be a guy who looks like he can be a contributor on that defense. So I think those are that really, really positive things out of that
game. Yeah, and Ladarius Green, I think, admitted after the game that, you know, he doesn't want to say that he's, you know, that he's 100% healthy, you know, kind of still kind of maybe working through. He doesn't look as fluid as he did quite yet, as he did in a San Diego Chargers uniform, for whatever that's worth. Now, will he ever get there the remainder of this year? I don't know. Is he maybe dealing with some scar tissue or what have you? Maybe it's still maybe a conditioning thing. He only played 14 snaps. Now that's an increase, you know, a little bit there. You would think that maybe these snaps are going to at least get near the 20 mark, right? I mean, there was.
I expect him to be in the. I expect him to be playing, you know, 60% of the Steelers' offensive snaps by the end of the year.
I'm not sure if he'll get that high because of you know, just how much do you want him out there as a blocker, you know, on running plays. Now, obviously, you're going to have to put him out there sometimes on running plays, because if you just, you know, it's not people, you might as well put a flashing light on his helmet if you send him out there and every time it's a pass play. So, you know, that.
And I feel a little bit that way with Sammy Coates, by the way. I meant to mention that. You know, I feel like you put him in there, it was a little bit the Dree Archer type of thing. Okay, he's in. Okay, this is the play they're going to run.
Right, right, right.
You know, Sammy's in. They're going to run the nine.
So, you know, look, I would hope that he starts getting closer to this 20-25 snap, you know, a game type situation with Green here. Boy, they just I keep going back to if they could get that deep sideline game back on track again. Now that they got, let me ask you this: did you think they used Le'Veon Bell enough out of the backfield as a pass catcher?
Well, I mean, it's his lowest catch total in a while, but it didn't feel like the passing game was a big problem. I mean, I didn't feel like they used Eli Rogers enough, so I don't know exactly where the attempts are going to come from, because, you know, they only got two possessions in the third quarter, so they didn't get a lot out of that, and then they get the last touchdown and then the last possession. So basically, you know, what happens is after they run that long pass to Sammy Coates on third and two, there's no offense in the game except for the last touchdown drive. The Steelers don't do anything else the rest of the game. I mean, they fed the ball to Le'Veon Bell on the ground, and penalties kind of stopped them a couple times, and they didn't get what they wanted. So the answer is yes, but I don't know that there was a clear answer as to why. I don't think the play calling was bad in that respect. It's just they didn't get to run enough plays.
Right, and boy, that third quarter, they're not two possessions in. Well, the Steelers, I think, finished up a possession in. You know, you had one possession each, right? Wasn't it, or am I seeing things? What didn't?
I think it was two. Well, they had an 11-22, so you know, there you go. That's all you need to know, right?
The what? Say again.
The Colts had an 11-minute, 22-second drive with no points in the quarter.
Right. So one possession each in the third quarter there. Okay, let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball here real quick. You mentioned Bud Dupree. He played 20 snaps in the game, so that's obviously great to see. Boy, when Ryan Shazier is healthy and that knee's working, he can scoot through that line, can't he? He can knife through that line. Javon Hargrave, you can see him kind of the maturation on a game-to-game, you know, situation with him right now. He sniffed out that early in the game, that third down screen real well. He's always running to the football, it seems like. It didn't seem like he was off his feet a lot in this game. I thought overall it was a big step forward for Javon Hargrave in this game. Sean Davis.
Let me back you up and just say, you know, and we talked about this Friday, so not that we're geniuses, but this was pretty clear, and it exemplified itself from the get-go. Steelers were going to load the box, stop the run, and they were going to come at Tolzien like crazy. They were going to bring guys all the time from all different angles. We have now seen the defensive backs coming is a staple of the Steelers' defense, again like it was last year. It was non-existent the first 6 weeks. We saw it from the first play with William Gay getting a strip fumble. The Steelers did, again, they did a really good job of stopping the run, as you pointed out earlier, until Jordan Todman got in there in the last minute and a half. But just the game plan was as expected. And, you know, Tolzien, the credit I give Tolzien is for standing in the pocket and taking the hits.
He took some wallops, too. Ross Cockrell really got him there in that second half, and he did. He really stood in that pocket and delivered some balls. Had a lot of success to Dwayne Allen over the middle, and then, of course, on a couple of cover two situations with Lawrence Timmons covering the seam. Props to T.Y. Hilton for holding on to that one down.
Good. That's as good as you'll see, right? I mean, you and I mean, you look at that and you're just like, everybody's dead.
The Mike Mitchell wrecking ball came through there and took out himself, took out T.Y. Hilton, took out Lawrence Timmons all in one play there. And it was a well, you know, David, we go into these things thinking, especially teams against the Colts, like the Colts and the Browns, we go into these things thinking anything less than 42-3, you know, we're so wanting them to play the perfect game on both sides of the football, and we tend to forget that the other team's paid to break down the film and get the matchups that they want. And exploit those and make the plays on top of them. So, you know, was it a perfect game by this defense? No, not at all. The Colts left a lot of plays out on the field, but it's not the Steelers' fault on a few of those. A few of those the Steelers played a part in. Mike Mitchell on that end zone throw that the ball's kind of pinballing around, looks like it might get caught. He delivered a hit here. Or in that situation, and Jard.
Yeah, and Shazier did a really good job of filling that passing lane. And Collinsworth did a good job of pointing that out on the TV broadcast on that fourth down play. That's the one you're talking about?
Sure, yes. And what kind of psychology or mental factor does these hits by Mitchell have moving forward?
Well, that's a great point. That's probably an underplayed point when Odell Beckham Jr. and Victor Cruz and Sterling Shepard look at the film and think about running the middle of the field, especially the deep middle of the field. Are they going to say, good God, you know, that's Mike Mitchell territory. He is killing guys these days. That's a really good point because it can't not play. Look, we talk about courage, and I don't think there's anything more courageous than a quarterback standing in the pocket like Tolzien did, because the receiver you never quite know. But when you're the more horizontal to the line of scrimmage that you're running, the more danger you're in of getting killed. And you know, T.Y. on that one, he was kind of running a skinny post, and you know, Mitchell got there. It's that's tough stuff, man. Those guys, You rarely see Antonio Brown take hits like that, and that's one of the reasons he's had the longevity and success that he has, because he's an elusive guy. But don't fool yourself. T.Y. Hilton is also that guy. He's maybe not as agile, you know, in small spaces, but he's a burner who's elusive. And, you know, Mike Mitchell was lining guys up. And I said the same thing in the Cleveland game. And I got mocked a little bit last night because the Steelers were getting chewed up a little. But I think in both these games, we've seen them play very fast and bring a lot of big hits. They were laying the lumber in the Cleveland game. They laid the lumber in this one, too.
Right. And, you know, it's just one it's one aspect that there is no that's a big hit. Look at it on tape in the game book. You know, for you know, players, obviously, when they're preparing for games, will see that stuff. And how many receivers across the league make that catch that T.Y. Hilton made? So, and look, here's another thing I know a lot of people are upset about. How can they continue to let Lawrence Timmons crawl that deep middle of the field? Well, who else are you going to get in that situation when you have your base defense on the field? And don't tell me Vince Williams, you know, because
no, I and look, Dave, I'm one of those people asking the question, and as you know, we've been discussing this for 2 years, and they were willing to take Timmons off the field at the end of last year. They were willing to take Timmons off the field in the first half of this year. I still think Robert Golden is a better option in these types of situations, or maybe even Jordan Dangerfield in these types of situations, than Lawrence Timmons. I mean, I think it's just insane to ask. Look, we talk about the Steelers wanting to get Le'Veon Bell on linebackers. I get it. The other teams want to get their guys on linebackers too. But when you got Timmons on Dorsett at the goal line, when you got Timmons on T.Y. Hilton going down the middle of the field, when you got Timmons on Moncrief in another situation, I just think that's a bad schematic plan for the
Steelers. Well, here's the thing. If Lawrence Timmons is going to be in the game because personnel on the other side of football dictates it. You know? I mean, they're
Right. Well, you have some options on down and distance. I mean, you can just say, regardless, if it's third and more than four, we're taking Timmons off.
Right. But, I mean, wasn't that one throw to Hilton on like a first and 10 play or something?
I don't know, but you're right about that. Look, they're going to be plays, and you wonder how the scheme, you know, that's then, you know what, then you give Chudzinski a pat on the back and say, well, if he's going to call that play on first down and he can isolate it so that he gets, you know, Hilton in the slot and the linebacker's got to cover him, well, then the Colts did well.
I'm looking at here. Pass, let's see. That was a second and 11 play that Hilton was injured on. Now, of course, we'll have to go back and look at I don't know for sure, so I'm not going to say. I thought the Colts were kind of in a more heavier personnel package in that, but I'll have to go back and look at that.
And you could argue that, you know, like saying third and four, you could say second and 10 or more, let's get Timmons off the field. I mean, you can make that argument. I would
right,
make that
but argument. Until what I'm trying to say is he's your best option in most situations, unless pulling him off the field for another defensive back for a dime type package. Is the NFL going more to these nickel backers, if you will? Yes, and that's probably. Look, it's a shame. It's a shame Shamarco Thomas didn't work out with his team, right? I mean, because you want a guy that maybe a defensive back slash safety that you can have out there on rundowns and feel comfortable, and yet have out there to run and carry the seam on in a cover two situation. And just because you have Timmons out there doesn't mean that you shouldn't run cover two, because obviously if you start running cover three every time in those situations, they're going to find a way to exploit that as well too. So it's kind of the best of what you got. Now, do the Steelers need to go into this next draft and find another, you know, super athletic inside linebacker that can play the run in the pass? Yes, you'd like to have a whole team full of guys that run 4-3 and can jump out of stadiums. But, you know, I understand the frustration. And look, I mean, Tolzien early was connecting up with Dwayne Allen in the middle of the field and all, and that was a little bit frustrating. But, you know, the other teams paid to find those mismatches and take advantage of them as well too.
So how did you think Ross Cockrell played?
I haven't dissected it enough. I mean, I want to see what happened on that one where the defender got behind him to see maybe if he was expecting. That's why I put question mark on Twitter on that play. Was he expecting help over the top deep there? I just haven't seen that play enough from the right angle to kind of. He's played better. I'll put it to you this way.
He's had better games, or he's playing
he's
better?
He's played better.
He's had better games. Yeah, I didn't think it was his best game. I mean, look, they targeted him. I continue to think, like we talked about, around the I think Artie Burns was okay. Let me ask you this. We didn't mention this on those plays around the goal line. Look, this is on the Colts. They had like six plays inside the 5-yard line. They didn't score a touchdown. Two things. One is, do you agree that if Scott Tolzien doesn't stumble going into the play where Sean Davis tackles him, he probably scores?
Oh, wow. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. I think that definitely was a killer there, because when he got around the outside, I was like, well, he's clearly going to score, and he's going to score easily. And then he pulls the ball down, and Sean Davis gets there, and he stumbles his feet. So I thought that was a killer for them. The second one was – what was the second one I was going to ask you? All right, well, I can't remember what I was going to ask you, but how about Mike Mitchell's interception return?
Yeah. Boy, I thought seeing that replay, that ball looked like it was almost going to go through his hands there, but
Well, that was Gay. Gay almost went through Gay's hands. I thought Mitchell, if he beat Tolzien, you might see him off to the races.
If you look at the Mitchell one, too, it looked like he had a little trouble at the last minute. It looked like that thing wanted to slip through his hands there. If you go back and look at that one again. Look, I'm just thankful to see this secondary pick off some pass. Sean Davis had one early in the game, that high throw from Tolzien to, I think, Dwayne Allen. I can't wait to see the end zone view of that one, to see if that one just went right through Sean Davis's hands on that one. I'm just thankful to see these interceptions, and you know, regardless of when they come and regardless of who gets them in those situations. So props to them. And look, I could pick this defense apart today, David, but I'm not.
All right, I got two more topics. One is, let's get into Tomlin a little bit. I thought Mike made a mistake on clock management. I gave it 55 minutes. So here's the reason I thought he made a mistake. You get past the two-minute warning, and the Colts run a play on third down, and nobody does anything. Nobody calls timeout until the clock runs down to 1:12. Here's my thought. The Steelers are ahead 21-7. What's the risk here? The risk is, if you call timeout at, let's say, 1:55, and the Colts score, well, you get the ball back with 1:55, up 7. If you call timeout and the Colts don't score, you get the ball back with 1:55 on your own 1-yard line, and you got 1:55 left. And okay, so that's the scenario. Now, if they do score with 1:12 left, now it's a 7-point game, and you've not given your offense nearly the same amount of time as you would have. You've cost them 50 seconds, so it's going to be a lot tougher to get in position to score points. And if they don't score, you get it with 1:12 left. So to me, by not calling timeout, that's the all-time living in your fears. You were more concerned about having the ball on the 1-yard line and having too much time for yourself than you were about giving your offense more time in case they did score. You have to say the play on fourth and goal from the 1 is about a 50-50 proposition at worst for the offense to score a touchdown. So to me, you want to make sure your offense, because the worst case scenario for the Steelers is being up 7 rather than 14. I don't want time for our offense to have the ball with 1:55 left on the 1-yard line. Well, hey, first of all, you've been running the ball like a hot knife through butter through them. So that's point number one. Point number two is even if they had all three timeouts, so they burned three timeouts and you punt it away and they're back at midfield, you're still up 14 with 1:20 left. It didn't make any sense. And I understand people are going to point to, well, this is why he didn't call timeout. Well, then that's the all-time living in your fear. So I don't know if you paid attention to that, Dave, but to me, what I'm concerned about is them scoring, and I want this high-powered offense, which has had a great half, to have as much time as possible to answer.
I think, Tomlin, my view on it right when it happened was Tomlin didn't want to burn back. He wanted to take a timeout after seeing what the Colts were going to line up with on that fourth down play.
Okay. And you know what? I still wish he would have done that. Stopped it at 155.
And then, in other words, you wanted him to take back-to-back timeouts.
Is that legal in the league? I'm trying to remember. Did they outlaw that somewhere along the line?
Well, I mean, the Colts had called.
They were the one who stopped the clock. But maybe if this. Are you allowed to call back to back timeouts anymore? Did they drop that with the icing the kicker bull stuff? Yes.
I don't remember that.
No, that's a very good point. And if that's the answer, okay, well, that is one. That is a reasonable answer, I have to say, and I hadn't thought of that. So they did do that, and they were able to do it because the Colts called timeout because they ran it all the way down because they wanted to make sure the Steelers didn't have time, and then they showed their offense, and Mike did call timeout. So good point by you.
You know, that's my only thing was that Tomlin wanted to, more than anything, I think he wanted to see what they were going to do on fourth.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, the second thing is, hey, how about we saw Landry Jones and Fitz Toussaint? Got to pull out win. Hey, guys, didn't have to play that.
All I needed was two explosive runs by Le'Veon Bell in that game, and I think I would have hit the terrible podcast trifecta there because I said, okay, go see Landry Jones in this game. Mike Mitchell's going to get an interception. And I think I said Le'Veon Bell's going to have two explosive runs in this game on top of. But anytime you can get those guys off the field in late game situations, you do it.
You think we're learning? Do you think Mike Tomlin's changing his philosophy? Maybe you don't need to risk guys in meaningless times?
He was still out there running around, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, you're right. You got to have some guys out there. But all right, so one last thing. I got to give you my little piece of research that I did last night. So, the Le'Veon Bell stats are because we haven't really talked much about them. But, again, another really good game on the ground. But how odd is it, Dave, that in the last 2 weeks he has not had a carry for more than 12 yards? But he in the game against Cleveland, he had 28 carries for 146. Get this, for 5.214. And I hate carrying decimal points. It's totally useless to go past one decimal point. But I just wanted to show the kind of extreme oddity of this stat. So 28 carries, 146, one touchdown, no carries more than 12 yards, and 5.214 yards per carry. And in this game, 23 carries, 120 yards, one touchdown, no carry more than 12 yards, and 5.217 yards per carry. As Alex looked up, nobody has gone 120 yards back-to-back weeks, 120 plus yards without a carry of more than 12 yards since Christian Okoye, get that name, the Nigerian Nightmare, in 1988. So kind of an odd stat line in consecutive weeks.
Yeah,
for Bell.
Sure would like to see him break a couple of these, though, wouldn't you?
And I think his longest one was the one that got called back on the first DeCastro hold, right? It was down there in that end of the 2 minutes, last 2 minutes of the first half, right? Didn't he take one for about 18 yards up the middle? And then, it looked like they were kind of out around the 25, but DeCastro's penalty
nullified.
Yeah,
his longest run. Fitz Toussaint had the longest run for the Steelers in the game of 16 yards. And
what's he doing running out of
what
bounds?
What is he? What's Vince Williams carrying that punt in the end zone for?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, Jordan Berry should go over and beat him up.
Yeah. Jordan Berry had three feet for a birdie there. He backed that one up nicely. I forget who it was that tweeted it after the game. Said Mike Tomlin just shook his head when Vince Williams when he was walking into the locker room. I said, didn't they cut to a commercial right out? I couldn't believe what I saw at first. And then they come back, and then, of course, it just was a boneheaded play. And luckily we can sit here and giggle about it. But had that happened in a meaningful situation, holy moly, can you imagine? But it's and I tweeted this right after Fitz made that long run. Man, just fall your ass down, man. Stay in bounds. Let that clock tick.
I didn't get. You know, that's a really sloppy play by Vince Williams. I don't know what he was thinking.
Let's get to a few of these tweeter questions here real quick, David. Let's see. Let's start with Adam. I think it's Ilfelder on Twitter here. Why wouldn't defense always play a safe call when the other team punting past the 50? Prevent fake number one priority. Look, I mean, they whatever you do, the opposition's looking for something to try to exploit, and especially if you do things constant. I'm not going to get on here and pretend that I know everything about special teams and how Danny Smith tries to align things or whatnot. Was it an unfortunate big play? Should it probably have gone for less than what it actually went for? Yes, but, you know, they'll learn from it, hopefully, and move on. You know, playing safe sometimes can prevent you from having a big turn on the back end. I guess that would be my answer to that.
They ran a good play. Jordan Dangerfield was a half second late. You know, you look at how the coverage was set up. Shazier releases. There's just one guy in the pattern, and Dangerfield didn't recognize it soon enough. Good play again.
Grego on Twitter says, from what you've seen so far, can you project Artie Burns to develop into at least a true number one, if not greater? Well, here's the thing. He's on the field now, and he's however you want to number him, number one, number two. So he is a number one or number two right now. Now, are you asking if Artie Burns is going to be becoming an all-pro? A guy with six interceptions a year. He's got ball skills, you know. So is he?
I like everything I've seen from Artie Burns. It doesn't mean every play he's made has been a good play, but I like everything I've seen.
Here's the thing, and David, since Alex broke down that play last week and had Artie Burns on his losers list, evidently we're the presidents of the Artie Burns is a bust fan club right now. This is what I've said all along about Artie Burns. If Jens would just listen, he's been inconsistent. I've also said all along that if you get him on the field and get these snaps and it works out that you get wins in the process, even more the better. He is developing. That's the best way I can say it right now, is he's developing. He's going to make more mistakes moving forward. He's going to intercept another pass or two probably the rest of the season. You just need – he's out there, okay? I don't think – I'm not going to sit here and tell you what Artie Burns is going to be a Pro Bowler right now, and I'm not going to tell you that he's going to be in Pittsburgh for his entire contract. They've got a first-round draft pick in him. So, barring injury, he's going to be around, and he's going to play out his first 4 years, and we'll see when it comes to the option year on him. So, it's too early to sit here, I think, though, and say, is he going to be a Pro Bowler? Is he going to be this, that, and the other? He is the key word that Adam asked there, develop. He's developing. And that's all you can ask for right now. Another question here from am I right, David?
Right. Okay. Yeah. I agree.
Penske yep. Files. Looks like Eric. I can't see your last name. Dieter. Yep. Hilton's drop and Moncrief's drop were two huge plays. It could have been 14 more points. Absolutely. And if you could put a lot of ifs on a few plays that the Steelers didn't make as well too. This one from SJT63. Assuming they instantly know the playbook, how many current NFL quarterbacks would you swap for Ben for the rest of 2016?
Wait, what?
Assuming they instantly know the playbook, how many current NFL quarterbacks would you swap for the rest of 2016?
I love the one I'm going to answer this, but I love the tweet I saw yesterday where somebody said, do you think the Steelers should go after Stafford in the offseason and groom him behind Ben and let him learn the playbook and then have him take over when Ben's done?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Man. All right. So the answer to that is, I don't know.
I mean, too many Mike Tomlin hypotheticals there. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, you know, who fits the offense, who throws it down the field. I mean, look, here's the answer. The most important thing out of the game last night was Ben Roethlisberger played great on the road. That is the most important takeaway. I've been meaning to get that line out there the whole show, so that's it. That's my takeaway from the game last night, as we saw Ben beat Ben on the road. Okay, I think that's important.
If you're able to run the football, if you're able to get Ben Roethlisberger protection, and if you get a deep threat that can get down the side of the field and catch one or two of these balls, there's nothing wrong with having Ben. I mean, plain and simple.
Right. So yeah. We got to wrap this up.
Well, one other thing. People want to know about Moats. Yes, Moats did play in the game. Probably, Dupree, obviously, ate into his snaps there. How many snaps did Moats play? 17 defensive snaps, it looked like. He played less than Bud Dupree. But, yes, if you probably blinked a few times during the game, you probably missed Arthur Moats being out there. Go ahead.
And I don't care whether Moats or Ciccolo plays or not. I love Moats. He's a great person. Get Dupree on the field. How many snaps did Jarvis play?
26. What about James Harrison getting plunked upside the head by LT Walton?
Oh, yeah. How about that? I mean, you know, it's a stupid thing that happens in football, and it's not a Steeler thing. Everybody does it. Bang guys on the helmet. Don't bang guys on the helmet when they're on the ground, you know? So bang guys on the helmet. But, okay. Hey, Steeler Nation, mortgage rates are currently at all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, or purchase a vacation home or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender. Love the opportunity to help you out. You can call him today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or to apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. I will be on ESPN today, 4 to 7, with a lot more Steeler
talk. And we'll
be
wrapping things up the rest of the weekend, as we always do, on SteelersDepot.com with film reviews, everything imaginable. We'll have a lot of time to look at this game and break it down, and thank God it was a win. On top of it, Steelers 2-0 in the last 2 weeks since four-game losing streak. That's something to be thankful for right now. Going to have a great test against the Giants a week from Sunday, so you know that will be a real good measuring stick, I think, for this team as well. We'll preview that game next week, probably have another beat writer on who covers that team to talk about the Giants. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for all the Twitter questions today as well, too. We might have time to take some next week as well. David, have a great rest of your weekend here.
You too, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.